to the National Review Podcast, the official podcast of thenationalsreview.com. My name is Colm, but I'm not here alone. No, no, no. I'm here with the heart and soul, Mr. at Nationals Review on Twitter, Charlie Flegal.
Mr. at Culmination, how are you doing?
You like that? I had to change it up a little bit.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, we're back here. This is sort of a little new for us. It's the middle of the day.
Yeah, well, I am currently unemployed for another week.
Wow.
I quit my old job and I'm starting a new one. So, and I'm going to go on a mini vacation, so the night times are not going to work because I won't be around. So.
Yeah. And I'm always around during the day.
Yeah. From home.
So yeah.
We'll do a little daytime podcasting, which means I don't have a beer.
I don't either. I have a drink, but not a beer.
Yeah, I have some water. But
I have Pepsi Cola made with real sugar.
Oh, that's
there you
good
go.
Stuff.
That's the gimmick.
I prefer Coca-Cola made with
sugar. I would have to agree. I'm a Pepsi. Like, if you sat down a regular Pepsi and a regular Coke, I'm going to go Pepsi. But if you do real sugar in each, I would go with the Coke. For some reason, it just works good.
So, I actually, when I was in business school, they talked about, in like a marketing class or strategy class or something, they talked about the fact that the Pepsi Challenge works because Pepsi is actually sweeter.
Yeah.
And
yep.
So if you ever put them next to each other,
it always wins.
People take Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
But people that like Coke tend to think after three or four sips of Pepsi that it's a little too sweet.
Right. Well, I grew up most of my life in the South, and they basically make you drink Pepsi Cola down there. That's what I've been told.
Not Dr. Pepper?
No, that's more Texas-y in the mid.
What about Cheerwine? Have you ever had
Listen to this. Harris Teeter carries Cheerwine in our area.
I'm going to South Carolina this week.
Well, you can have as much as you want.
I want to try it. I've never had
it. Well, I'm sorry to ruin it that you can get it down the street, but.
I want to get it from the source, which
from
is the Carolinas,
source.
I guess.
I think I have a picture I've once tweeted on Instagram that has me next to a Cheerwine vending machine.
It's like cherry soda, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
People
but
love
not
it.
Like cherry Coke.
I do like cherry Coke.
No, but not like that. It's more
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's more like orange or grape soda.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
I'm excited.
So we had today we're going to – it's your regular show, but we had a special event that you basically brought to mine and Markham's attention back in, March, I guess?
Something like that.
Yeah, from a site that both of us follow, baseballperspectives.com.
Yeah, it's the only baseball site that I pay for.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't pay for ESPN Insider?
Well, I read it.
I think I read it too.
But I do not pay for it. To be honest, I don't use Insider that much.
Right, I don't either.
I like Keith Law, and I like reading what he has to say at least. And you know, when the draft rankings and stuff like that come out, it's interesting, but Baseball Perspectives is really the one I look at.
Right, and this event, which was basically, we all the three of us had tickets, and before the game, we were led through the stadium to the, I believe it was the Roosevelt Room, and inside it was basically like they had food, so we got hamburgers and hot dogs, stuff like that, and then we were privy enough to sit. We got front row seats and sat, and the first half was actual. People who work for the Nationals.
Right. So first of all, thank you and Markham for getting front row seats because I'm sitting there trying to put ketchup on my dog, and I'm like, where are they? And you guys sat in the very front row, which
was
amazing.
It was amazing.
Easier to ask questions. I got to take. If you look on the Nats Review website, there's just two pictures from the event, but. It's like close-ups of the guys that I just took with my iPhone because we were right there.
Right, and it gives you it basically shows you what we had. I mean, it was a nice little setup for it, I thought. And we also had that amazing Walter Johnson tuxedo cigarettes in the background ad.
Yes, giant poster of Walter Johnson advertising cigarettes. So I'm guessing they don't have a lot of children's events in that room.
No. So, like I said, the first half was, I can name where Nationals Baseball Operations Staff, it was Mark... Oh, God.
Schlaba is how he pronounced it.
Schlaba.
He is awesome, by the way. He went – so we've done a couple what do you call it? They call them blogger days.
Mm-hmm.
That guy, you could name anybody in the system, in the entire Nat system, and he could give you three sentences at least on that guy.
That's unbelievable. So he's like the – is he the main guy for minor leaguer type of thing?
Yeah, he sort of runs the minor league development, right? So his title is director of player development, so – he sits here in D.C. on the major league, you know, staff, but he's sort of the guy that tells them what's going on.
Oh, I guess you. So he's like reporting to Rizzo and all the other. And
yeah, and probably directing the guys in the minor leagues to do this and this. And, you know, one of the things that he said, we don't need to get into like everything that they talked about, but yeah, he was talking about with position changes. Double A is when they kind of start to know when a guy might make the majors. So mm-hmm. that's when if they want to move positions, they'll do it then. Mm-hmm. So he's probably the guy that's reporting down saying, all right, it's time for Danny Espinosa to take, you know, plays at second base now. Mm. That kind of stuff.
I get you. And then I thought my favorite of the group was the assistant to the GM, Brian Minetti, who's actually younger than us, I found out, Flegal.
Well, you know what? That's going to happen more and more. He's an assistant GM. I don't know that.
But not young in experience, though. The guy, I believe I read he was 9 years in Pittsburgh. Is that what?
Yeah, he was in Pittsburgh for a while. I mean, he's one of these guys that you figure he'll be a GM at some point.
Yeah, totally. So I was really – I really liked – and it seemed like all that group there sort of like reports to him, and then he reports to Rizzo type of thing. Is that what you thought?
Yeah, he is – so he said that a lot of the stuff that he does is less exciting, but there's an assistant GM – there are two assistant GMs. There's Doug Harris and Minetti, and Harris wasn't there.
No, right.
But Harris's title is also – in addition to assistant GM, it's VP of player development. So I have a feeling Harris is a little bit higher on the pecking order.
Gotcha. I getcha.
Yeah, Minetti also reports to.
Awesome. And then we had Adam Cromie, who seemed like the marketing guy. He's the director of baseball operations.
Yeah.
And then, which I thought, the two that also I would love to just sit in a room was Michael DiBartolo and Samuel Cohen.
Yes.
Who are basically the stats guys.
Yeah, and Sam Cohen, I mean, you talk about a young-looking guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, they are the stats guys. And I think Samuel Cohen came on. He was on the team for a while. He used to be, like, an analyst, and now he's the manager of stats.
Wow.
But he's, like, 26 or 27.
Oh, my God. It seems like if you have kids growing up, you should have them be a mathematics and statistics major.
Yeah, well, knowing statistics, if you want to do baseball, and, well, you know, some of the people that we met today, or met on Saturday, definitely know statistical analysis.
So you wrote a great article. You guys could check it on the site, nationalsreview.com, from June 22nd, and you put up some highlights, but is there anything you wanted to touch on here from that group?
You know, I thought it was interesting. What did you think about – so somebody stood up, and I swear it wasn't me.
It wasn't the Kansas City Royal guy. Oh, sorry, inside joke.
There was a guy there that probably had a little too much to drink.
He smelled like a bottle, a fifth of something.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I wrote at the bottom of the article that he fell into a vat of whiskey before the event.
Yeah, I see it.
Comment loudly throughout my one.
And you got the ravers on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So somebody else asked what they thought about – I think what they said was the obvious move when Harper comes back is to put Zimmerman at second base.
Yes.
Which I think Adam Cromie was kind of like, well, you may think that's the obvious move. I don't think that's the obvious move.
And they said they never even discussed it.
Yeah, and you and I kind of looked at each other and were like, never? You've never talked about it? So I don't know that they've never talked about it. But they certainly don't seem like there's any reason for us to think that Ryan Zimmerman is going to get a chance at second base this year.
Right. I was also amazed with – I don't know. I didn't realize how many other people are making decisions in the background and that – and we had a discussion about this and how Matt Williams basically – he's coming to – let's say – they don't play today actually, but tomorrow – he would say, okay, here are the guys I have today, and this is what I'm going to do. I didn't realize that. I thought it was more – he had way more input.
No, I mean, I think he's the – well, first of all, I think they do play today. I think they're –
they do? They're not on travel? After a four-game series?
They're playing in Milwaukee. They're starting right away.
Oh, my God. All right.
Best team in the National League.
There you go.
So, you know, I think you're right, though. I think Rizzo, it's kind of like he's the leader.
Mm-hmm.
He's a manager like a business manager, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He's got staff underneath him.
Right.
And whatever they do or whatever he does, he gets a lot of input from them. But they have, yeah, they've got a lot of guys giving him input.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool to see, like, a little bit of how that works.
Right. And basically, after we talked to those guys, then they brought up the group from Baseball Perspectives, and it was, I guess, a more relaxed, I guess, feeling,
yeah,
would you say so?
You know, it's one of those things that, having been to the Blogger Days, I think the crowd tends to be a little trying to be well-behaved when the Nats staff is there, or when that, you know, this time no Nats players showed up, but at Blogger Days, we've had a chance to interview a Nats player, and you just try and be a little, you know, respectful, like, we want to be asked back.
Right, right.
But then when Baseball Perspectives came up, they were the ones that did the arranging of this. And so I think people relaxed a little bit. I agree.
But it seemed to me my two favorite and was the – I'm going to get the names wrong – was Dr. – what was his name?
No, that's Professor Parks.
Professor Parks and
yeah,
then
so,
the other guy from Chicago.
Right. So Jason Parks is he's sort of – from what I understand, Baseball Perspectives is lead prospect guy.
Yeah.
And he's really knowledgeable about
prospects. Really knowledgeable. I mean, unbelievable the way he was describing, like, the way people are releasing the ball from their hand, the control they had. I found that unbelievable when he was talking.
Yeah, so he's at Professor Parks on Twitter. I highly recommend following him, especially if you want to see pictures of mustachioed male models from the 80s, because he put the random weird pictures of that all the
now time. Is he a local guy or is he a Texas guy?
He's Texas.
Okay.
He's based out,
because I saw he had the state on his arm for some reason.
Yeah. And then the other guy is that you're talking about is Harry Pavlidis or Pavlidis.
Oh, he's awesome.
At Harry Pav. He's really knowledgeable. So he runs with another guy. He runs a website called brooksbaseball.net, and that has, like, all the pitch FX data. So the website is, you know, I think they do a pretty good job of making it user-friendly considering the amount of data they have. But it's the one that, like, tells you not just velocities, but, like, vertical drop and horizontal drop and spin on different pitches, right? So you can go in and see that maybe just looking at the horizontal or the vertical drop and the horizontal movement on a curveball doesn't tell you much individually in a game, but you could, like, line up the last six Strasburg starts and see, like, five of them are great, or five of them are very similar, and then one of them, like, the drop isn't there, and he got hit, and you go, ah, his curveball wasn't moving, or, so, you know, stuff like that. And it's a little tough to dissect some of that, but...
Yeah, I just brought up Brooks Baseball, and I typed in our game from June 21st with Doug Pfister.
Right.
And it's amazing. The data that you're seeing here is unbelievable.
Yeah, so I actually talked to Harry later, and he told me a little bit about – but they're providing a lot of this to a lot of organizations, including teams, I believe.
Interesting.
Yeah, but, I mean, probably more on the media side.
So is PitchFX, is that like an open source type of thing? Like, I don't get
it. I don't know how they are. I'm not really sure how they are the purveyors of that information.
Right.
They take – the data set is publicly available at MLB Advanced Media, MLB AM. And then I think they take the data and they actually do stuff with it to make it a little bit more, you know, I don't know.
Oh, I see. Make it more understandable. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Right. So what exactly they do with it to make it good, I'm not sure. But, like, they're smart people, right?
Right.
Dan Brooks, who runs Brooks Baseball, is a neuroscientist.
Wow.
And I talked to Harry, and he's, you know, he did, like, he did, like, technology, mobile app stuff, and, like, he's a technologist, too. So
interesting.
He knows his stuff with that. And then there's another guy locally that I don't really
know. Oh, Dan Rosenson. I think he was the guy who was sitting behind us.
Yeah. And so, yes. Younger guy with glasses, right? So Dan works with them as well, and he's local. He's, like, a Nats fan, so.
All right.
Let me see. Oh, his... his Twitter is actually at SixToolPlayer, like the six spelled out S-I-X. So if anybody wanted to get in touch with him and learn more about pitch effects and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
interesting. I love Harry's cover photo on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, he's got, he's got, is that the one with Bart Tuller?
Yes, it is. Dancing with Uma Thurman in that movie.
Yes, that's a good one.
So that was kind of a treat to have him there because he is a Chicago guy, and he came out and had a lot to say to us, I thought.
So I'll tell you about, you haven't even heard, I talked to him afterwards.
Yeah, tell me about this.
Well, we'll get into that. Let's keep it in order of the game.
Okay. So that event was awesome. I highly recommend if you guys hear about it or follow the site to definitely take advantage. Do they do another, like, every state? Like, how does that work?
They do a few stadiums a year, and this is the second year in a row they've been to Nats Park. And hopefully, because the experience was good, they'll keep coming to Nats Park.
I think
they
will, yeah.
I mean, they had probably, what do you think?
I have 30, 40 in there.
And more than a dozen guys from
baseball. Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe, they had so many people from Baseball Perspectives, they were standing on the side.
I'm guessing there's a lot of local contingent. I'm not sure.
Right. Oh, who was the guy also, I'm sorry, that was on the left of Dr. Park, Professor Parks? He had, like, shaved head and really was knowledgeable on pitchers.
Yeah.
I don't remember who that was. He was great.
I think his last name is Witt. He, so they joke about him. So if you want to track him down, you can probably figure it out. Because his cousin used to work for BP and then got hired by one of the teams, like maybe St. Louis.
Oh, wow.
So they always joke that he's the other guy with the same last name's cousin.
Gotcha.
But I just can't remember his name. But
now, do a lot of guys from Baseball Perspectives like end up going on to a major league club because of what they can offer?
I don't think it had happened a lot, but recently that guy went, and then Kevin Goldstein was their scouting guru before Jason Parks, and he got hired by the Astros. And
so
then
it is.
Wires was another guy that I followed on Twitter that was a BP guy that also got hired by the Astros.
Interesting. And the Astros are doing well, so hey.
Yeah. Well, they're following this more of a sabermetric formula, although.
But don't they always do this, play really great the first half of the season, then lose every game afterwards?
Probably. I'm sure they're not built.
Except for my boy Altuve.
Well, you know, the thing that's interesting, I think, that we definitely was hammered home by this group is that the analysis part of it, the statistical analysis, mm-hmm. I mean, the Nats are definitely big on it, right?
Right, which is awesome.
That guy Sam Cohen said that he found that Williams was more engaged than Davey was, and it wasn't to say that, you know, I think what he was saying was Davey had his own stats that he used, but, like, Williams was
all in.
Much more about, like, show me this, show me that, let me know what to do here, give me your advice kind of thing.
Yeah. It seemed to me like almost like there was an intimidation factor with Davey Johnson, and since Matt Williams is a new guy coming in, he's more open, I guess.
Right, and the interesting thing is Davey was always known as sort of like, in the 80s, he was known as like a stat geeky kind of guy. I think Davey has like a math master's or something random like that. And so I wonder if he was just at an age and at a point in his career where he was like, yeah, some of this is just overly complicated. I don't really want to deal with all of this. I have my own data sets.
Right, I got you.
Whereas Matt Williams is like, I'm kind of new to all this, so show me what's best. And they said that he was very like open-minded and willing to seek stuff out. So,
Awesome.
So, yeah, very cool event. And then we got to go to the game.
Yes.
We all sat together. In section 105.
Right in left field with the animals.
And so there was a group of people dressed up like animals.
And the way she explained it, she goes, Washington Zoo. And we're like, okay.
And then she's like, National Zoo.
Yeah.
And we're like, still don't get it.
Still don't see it.
So they were dressed, it was probably 15 of them.
Yeah.
They were all like in their early 20s and they were all hammered. And they were all wearing different animal costumes to try and get on TV in the left field corner.
Right.
Basically, and they were like, we came as the National Zoo. And at first I was like, so you guys, do you work at the National Zoo and you came as like a work solidarity thing? And she's like, no. We came as the National Zoo.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And it didn't.
Very confusing.
Got on TV.
Anyway, game was great. We got Julio Teheran versus Doug Fister. Both pitchers were quick.
Yeah. 8 innings, shutout ball for Fister.
Wow.
And,
that's now twice I've seen that guy live, and he's done the shutout for me. Unbelievable.
You got to go to all of his.
I guess I have to.
And he got a standing O when he left in the eighth.
Did he really? Wow.
Yeah, you had left.
Yeah, I left around 9:30. Got home at 11:30. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, the Metro is fun.
Yeah, I'll never do that again.
But he did great, and it was cool to see the fans understand that it was the eighth inning. He was at like close to 120 pitches, so they knew he wasn't coming back out.
Mm-hmm.
There was no announcement. It was just like fans around here are pretty knowledgeable these days, certainly compared to where they were 5 years ago, right? And so when a pitcher leaves in the eighth and he doesn't have a no-hitter going, but he has a shutout, they realize that was it because he was at so many pitches. So it was cool to see the standing O.
Yeah, that is really nice. I like that. It shows that fans are into the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, we went to this place called Blue Jacket, which I wanted you to
go. Oh, yeah, that's right. So how was it?
Well, it's a cool place. It was – you and I have been talking about checking it out. It's like a microbrewery, brew pub, right down the street from Nats Park. And it's probably like a 15-minute walk, maybe more like 15 minutes to get there. And
so, like, if I'm coming out of center field, which way am I going?
You turn right, and you walk, like, four blocks.
To that scary building with the Jurassic Park on it.
Yes, by the building that looks like it's going to be demolished, but in the meantime has a 20-foot-tall, you know, painting on it.
Yeah.
Two weird animals.
Okay. So, big place, small place?
Pretty big. Uh-huh. It was crowded.
Really? All Nats fans or locals?
I think it was mostly Nats fans, and so it was kind of cool because you're like, oh, this is like an actual post-game hangout spot.
Right, right.
I was surprised that it was crowded because it was – I mean, it was only – the game let out early, so we were there by like 10:15. So it wasn't like it was the middle of the night, but it's not like the trendiest, most popular area these days. So it's kind of cool to see that. I really do think it was a lot of – people coming out of the Nats game, so it's nice.
That's cool. Instead of us hanging out in a parking lot, it's nice that there's actually going to be options.
Yeah. You and I are not a fan.
Oh, I hate that place.
What's it called now? The bullpen or the
yeah, bullpen.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
It just doesn't work for me.
No.
But if you want lots of $6 Budweisers and cornhole, I guess it works for you. I'd rather go to Blue Jacket and get a $6 Imperial short.
Really? $6? It's not bad. And regular pint glasses, I assume?
Might have been more than that. I don't remember. I had a few beers already.
Okay.
But I got some really good beer. And I got to talk to, I said hi to a few of the guys that I didn't have a chance to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked to Harry at the end of the event. And so I chatted with him a little bit more. He told me a little bit about how he got into Baseball Prospectus, which is
cool. Oh, really?
Yeah, he basically, like, lost his job and started doing this stuff. And I don't know the full story, but he was, he was a tech guy. He was,
like an IT guy at a regular company?
He did, like, analysis, and he said, like, building apps and stuff like that. So,
really?
Hmm. Yeah, and now, it was interesting because I was talking to him, and I said it. I think I said it to him at the time, but it was like, I've never really wanted to be a journalist per se.
Right. But running a baseball is.
Well, like a job that like Adam Kilgore has or one of those guys that writes for the Washington Post, as cool as it is to follow the Nats around, like at this point in my career, I don't want to do something like that.
Right.
It's not. The guys that are leading the staff probably get paid pretty well, but it's a hard job. You have to write your story at 1 a.m. when you're playing
on
West Coast Swing and all that stuff. But the job that was always appealing to me is a job like what he has, what Harry has, which is you're doing more than just – you're not writing up game stories.
Right.
Which, believe me, it's cool, and there's something very like romantic and awesome about being like the beat reporter for a team.
Right.
But like, I didn't go to school for journalism. I never really wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But what these guys do, which is basically run a baseball website and like have a niche with this technology that they know, and then they can go out and talk about it and make money selling it and do stuff like that. That to me is kind of a cool job.
Very cool.
Talking to him a little bit about it. He's a Chicago guy, so I asked him if he knew I have a friend from business school whose name is Shiraz that works in the Cubs front office.
Oh, did he know him?
He did. He knew him pretty well. He said that, yeah, he was, you know, I probably talked to Shiraz like twice since business school, so he's not like a
that's still cool
anymore, but he was on my fantasy league when I was in business school. And
did he win every year?
No, he didn't. But he didn't have all the statistical analysis he has in front of him now.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were just talking about him and, like, his story, and it was very cool to hear his perspective on this guy. And he said, yeah, he's really smart, really personable, and I don't know any other people that could be a GM someday. So it's interesting to me because I thought maybe everybody in the front office is really smart and really personable, and that's where they get there. But just hearing Harry say that, I'm like, yeah, he is. So I could see maybe this guy Shiraz that I know will be a GM someday. Which
that would be unbelievable.
Cool. Yeah, to think of a guy you went, you know, one of your classmates is the GM of a team.
Yeah.
Then I think, where did I go wrong?
I'm telling you, I'm going to make my son do statistics and mathematics.
So the thing that I remember about Shiraz when he first got out of business school and he was telling us about the job, his hours were similar to the people that were investment bankers.
Oh, my God. So like nonstop. 2 or 3 in the morning?
Yeah.
And then come back at 6?
But he was getting paid like half of what people like me were getting paid who didn't get – who didn't get the business, the iBanking jobs, who got like the regular post-business school jobs. So
gotcha.
He's making a lot. And now, I'm sure he's living very comfortably.
Yeah, I think now he's doing all right.
And you know what? He didn't have a family. He was very unattached. And he was just kind of like, I'm going to do this for a few years and see how it works out.
Wow.
And so he was in a good position in his life to do that. And now, 7 or 8 years later, I'm sure he's making more money. He's still probably working 100 hours a week, but he probably...
But still, your office is Wrigley? It's pretty awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah. So,
wow.
There were a couple guys from my school that went that path. And,
wow.
And a couple of them that I was friends with.
How about other sports, or is it just baseball?
So one of the guys I know tried to get into hockey.
Oh.
Ended up working for a guy who finances stadiums.
Has hockey gotten into the stat game yet? I feel like they haven't.
They have. They have to a point. They have. There are hockey stats that I have no idea.
And I feel like football, they don't haven't even gotten into it because football is so, I don't know.
I think football might be the lowest on the high-end stats.
Because they change so, I mean, it's really hard to, I don't know even how you would stat that.
But like the guy that I know, who tried to go to hockey, ended up doing like finance. So it wasn't like he was doing stats. He was working for a guy that helps teams get loans and finance stadiums and purchases of teams and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
He did that for a few years, and they actually helped the Cubs redo their finance organization, or maybe it was with the Cubs sale. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's in the finance office of the Cubs too. So these two guys that were on in my 10-person fantasy league are now in the Cubs front office.
Wow.
And then there was another guy in our league who went and interned for the Padres for a year and didn't end up getting a job and ended up working for MLBAM for a couple years. But now he's like off doing something else completely, you know.
Nice.
So it's not like – and they were all really smart guys. It's not like, oh, well, I see why that guy did it and that guy didn't. It's just – some of it's just luck of the draw, right?
Right.
And then one of the guys we know from college – I think he works for the Padres, Doherty, if you remember right.
Oh, yeah, he does?
But I think he's in the sales organization.
Oh, gotcha.
He's not doing...
Right, not baseball player.
Stat stuff.
Yeah.
The stat stuff, it seems like the best way to get into it is to really go deep in with these BP-type guys.
Yeah.
And get noticed that way.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, the BP, all their people, do you know if it's... Is it all a paid position, or do they have a lot of, like, just... contributors.
I think they mostly do get paid somewhat, but I don't know that everybody's there full time.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right?
So they have like a
full time.
Guys
like, right. So some of the best, I don't know, if you guys don't follow at Suspettas BBQ, it's the Suspettas Family Barbecue.
Yeah.
They're hilarious. And they're hilarious. Guys that are college age kids. And I think they might be brothers, and they have, they just have a website and a podcast and a Twitter handle, and I didn't really bug them at the game because I was like, what was I going to go up and say? Like, your tweets are amazing.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know, like with Harry or with some of the other guys, I read their articles and I have something to talk to them about. I felt kind of weird just going right. to these guys and being like, I really like your tweeting.
They seem to be enjoying everything they're doing to
yeah,
those
they
two
seem
guys.
To have so much fun. And, yeah. and so I don't know that, like, they're getting paid, for example. Maybe they are.
Right.
But there are neither of them are full-time contributors to the site. So, or like that guy, Rosenson.
Oh yeah.
You know, he probably gets paid with Pitch FX, but I don't know if like Baseball Prospectus does or maybe
right.
they do. I don't know. But it's growing. It's a big group. So it's cool to see. Definitely fun to meet those guys.
Yeah. So how long did you stay out there at the bar?
We were probably there an hour and a half.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And
I should have gone because being on the train was just stupid.
Yeah. It took us closer to an hour to get back.
Oh, that's not bad.
To, sunny Montgomery County.
Yeah. Sunny. Sepetys barbecue. He has a great photo cover photo too.
Yeah, so I stole one of their pictures. they tweeted out a picture of some of the people from the stadium, and this was before anybody realized what they were dressed up for.
Yeah.
They said it looked like they were going to a meth rave.
Yeah.
But it's like a guy and a girl in pink tank tops and neon yellow shorts. Well, turns out they were dressed as flamingos for the
right.
Suit.
We were told by this someone who was very intoxicated.
She was not sober.
Right.
Oh,
well, that's great. That sounds awesome.
Back to the game.
Yeah.
They won the game. They won the next game to take 2 out of 4 from Atlanta, which wouldn't be a big deal except it was Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking 2 out of 4 is huge. So
huge for a team that we constantly have some kind of weird thing with, which I think it's unexplainable.
I do, too. I don't think it's...
I don't think it has anything to do with stats or anything. It's just... we have it in our head.
As I think I said to you at the event, I don't think Jason Worth goes up there in the third inning for an at-bat and goes, oh, my God, I'm so going to strike out because this is the Braves and I just suck against
right, exactly. By the way, there was an interesting question at the event about how that one guy was upset at the Jason Worth contract. Do you remember that?
No, I think he was just saying that everybody used to – hate the Jason Worth contract, and now people like it.
Oh, okay.
Or something. I don't know. It wasn't totally sober or coherent what he asked, but I don't think it was an actual question.
Okay.
He said. But I think his comment was basically like, you know, everybody, when the Nats signed Jason Worth, everybody went, what are you doing? And now it looks like, yeah, that might not have been such
a great play.
Yeah. So he's been obviously great for the team. He hasn't been hitting the last week. Neither has Ryan Zimmerman.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, let's go into that now.
Well, Zimmerman's been kind of basically in a slump since he came back. He's getting his hits here and there.
He had a great RBI in our game that we saw.
Yeah, that was a fun little play, right?
Yeah.
They balked LaRoche, and then Zimmerman hit him home. So that was nice. But, you know, I'm not that concerned. I think Zimmerman will come back. And Worth, he's going through a slump.
Yeah.
So, you know, that happens. I'm not too worried about either of them. I'm excited about Roark, right? At this point,
yes.
You have to start thinking he's for real.
I mean, and you asked a question, I believe, during the thing.
I did. I asked them.
And they pretty much agree with you.
And they were like, I guess you have to say he's for real, but he's not like a number one or two or three starter. And I was like, well, I don't think he's real. He has a career ERA in the majors of 2.32.
What? Oh, my God.
He's basically pitched, he's started 20 games.
No.
And he's, you know, so as a starter.
Which is crazy because on our show we had talked about, and I was always a big fan of Taylor Jordan, who I thought was going to end up being the better pitcher.
And I both predicted that Jordan was going to be better.
I can't believe it.
All the scouts said he was going to be better. And so Jason Parks was like, yeah, I basically... I don't remember what the terms he used, but he's like, I scouted him when he was in the Rangers. Because if you remember.
Oh, that's right. He was on the Rangers.
They got him for Christian Guzman.
Oh, what a great deal.
Yeah. So anyway, Parks was like, yeah, I basically looked at him and was like, this guy's a non-prospect.
Oh, my gosh. And now to see, he's won 1, 2, 3, 4 in a row. So in the last four.
I think it was Dan Kolko was on the radio this morning when I was being a stay-at-home dad and taking my daughter to preschool.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that in his last 18 starts, but that seems like a silly number because he has 20 starts.
Yeah, that goes way back, right?
But I thought he said in his last 18 starts, 11 of them he's allowed one run or less.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And that's like unheard of numbers from a guy who was just supposed to be an average pitcher.
Right.
So what can you say about the whole thing? Do you have anything – or you just think he gets it and he's just putting it together?
So they didn't want to praise him too much.
True.
Because they were like – look, if you look on the list of like the best players by the sort of sabermetric numbers, which are a little bit more predictive like WAR and stuff like that, mm-hmm. he's not as high because he doesn't strike people out. He's not even like an incredible strikeout or ground ball pitcher.
No.
But he doesn't walk anybody. So his strikeout to walk ratio is above 3.
But he doesn't strike out a lot. What does he get, like 4 a game maybe?
Right. He's not a big strikeout guy, but as you know, there's plenty of pitchers that have had some success in the majors by not striking out people but not walking anybody. So he's not putting people on base. So
Greg Maddux, I guess?
Well, Maddux.
Well, Maddux had it like 8 or 9 a game sometimes.
Yeah, right. Maddux struck
I'm trying
out
to think who.
Well, a good example of a guy that never struck anybody out, mm-hmm. and he was an extreme ground ball pitcher, but like when Chien-Ming Wong was on the Yankees and was really
Yeah, but he was a ground ball pitcher, wasn't he?
He was a super ground ball pitcher. Yeah. But he also, he had like a strikeout to walk ratio over 3. He would just only strike out like 3 or 4 a game. Hmm. So he would only walk 1. But
gotcha.
Roark isn't quite that kind of ground ball pitcher, but you know, they complimented him too. They said he's putting the ball in play, letting his defense do the work. If they're not hitting it out of the park, a lot of times it's going to be an out.
Wow.
I mean, I think they were basically trying to caution. So a couple things that they said was interesting. One was that the reason he wasn't considered a prospect in the minors was because he wasn't good in the minors.
Wow.
And so now he's been good. He may have along the way figured some stuff out that if he had figured this out 5 years ago,
right,
prospect guys would have been like, look, he's not going to be an ace, but this is a solid 4.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even a 3. But he hadn't figured it. So maybe there's just something that he's figured out in the last couple of years.
Wow. He's on my fantasy team. I'd like to point that out.
Well, he's doing well for
I'm pretty happy about that.
I think the other thing that they said was, you know, he's proven people wrong and he's continued to do so. And until he doesn't, you know, you can't sit there and think he's going to blow up.
Exactly, right.
From my perspective, the one thing that I'd like to remind people is even if you're waiting for a regression, that doesn't mean he's going to regress to a 4 ERA for the season.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If he turns into what a lot of people think
he's still really going to have a great year.
Which could be, let's say, for the rest of the year he has a 4 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
That's still a really good 5th starter. And that means he's going to end the season with an ERA like 3.25 or something.
Wow.
And you go, that was a good season.
Great season.
And you go, the second half wasn't great, but it was still serviceable.
I mean, remember last year when we were super excited about Detweiler's year that he was having?
Mm-hmm.
But I think Roark is having a better year. Even though I think what Detweiler was like, what, 9-1 at that one time?
Yeah, but you know what? Roark is doing better because he might not strike out quite as many, but Detweiler wasn't striking out anybody
yet. Right, right.
Detweiler walked a lot of guys, so you were always waiting for that thing to blow up.
That big inning for every team, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Tyler Roark does not let up big innings.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Tanner B. Roark. I don't know what the B stands for.
And then the last thing we have to talk about is we have 2 guys coming back.
So Ramos and Harper's coming back.
Is that Ramos went on assignment on the 21st, so
yeah, Ramos should be back.
He should maybe later this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they always thought he was going to be back after immediately at the end of the 15-day DL. So right. I think he was one of those guys, like, if he was another player who wasn't hurt every other week,
he'd be the best catcher in baseball.
Well, yeah, there's that. But if he wasn't, first of all, if he wasn't a catcher, because you have to have 2 catchers.
True.
if he was like an outfielder, what they may have done was sat him for 5 days and not done a DL thing.
So it was minor is what you're saying.
That's what I got, yeah. And so, but because it was Ramos and because he was a catcher, they're like, we can't spare 5 days. And with Ramos, they're like, a normal person would give 5 days, but we want to give you 10. So they're like, at that point, we might as well give him the 15.
Right, okay. And then Mr. Bryce comes out back.
On when Ramos goes back on the DL.
Yeah. Probably right after the All-Star break.
That was a question I told you I wanted to ask.
I know.
But
you didn't want to do it.
Well, I didn't.
Well, you said if you were going to generalize it, you would have done it.
It would have taken me too long to explain it. But my question was basically, like, at what point do you tire of Ramos's injuries? And I don't think it's yet.
No.
Let's say he comes back, plays for a month, goes on the DL for a month, plays for another month. You know, like, let's say he has two more DL trips this year. Mm-hmm. At that point, do you go, even, you know, as a healthy Ramos, he's a, whatever, a 4.5 WAR player, but an unhealthy Ramos doesn't give us that, so I'd rather get a 3 WAR catcher who's going to play
right.
than an unhealthy Ramos. And so my question would have been much more general than that and not use the name Ramos, and it would have taken 10 minutes to explain. And I still don't think they would have answered it.
No.
Ask. But I'm just curious, at what point does the front office go, you know what? Screw this guy. We love him, but he's not going to be healthy enough to.
Right.
Now, hopefully that doesn't happen. Hope, knock on wood, this is his last DL stint ever, and he doesn't get kidnapped.
Let's cross our fingers with that one. And how do you think now, Harper coming back, the big thing is what's going to happen with our outfield? Do you have an insight on what you think it'll be?
You know, it's interesting. Well, first of all, the front office addressed this a little bit.
No, they didn't. They danced.
Well, what they said was, it's a good point. It's like, this is not the worst problem to have.
True.
Too many good players.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you're one of those people that thinks you have to have the same lineup every day to get your team in a rhythm, you could be worried. But if you're like, no, I want Worth to sit one day, then Desmond can sit and Espinoza can play short while Desmond sits.
Oh, so you think we're going to have a different lineup every day?
It might be that, yeah.
Wow, I didn't think of that. So that way, you know what, that makes the most sense because you're resting guys for, we're assuming, a postseason run.
Right, and so what sort of threw a wrench into everything was, I think the assumption was, all right, once Harper comes back, Zimmerman's going to play third.
Right.
And I find it interesting that, and I love Zimmerman, don't take this as a knock on him, but like, he was being called Mr. Team Player for moving to left field a month right. and a half ago. Or a month ago when that right. was happening.
Uh-huh.
And now he gets interviewed and he says, I really don't want to play third at all.
Yeah, because he realizes how easy it is to play left field and third base.
What happened to Mr. T? You know, like, it doesn't sound like
it. Yeah, that doesn't sound like it.
And so maybe the move to left field was because he was like, it's not because I'm sacrificing, it's because I really don't want to play third base anymore.
Huh.
So if Zimmerman doesn't want to play third, how often can you put him there?
Exactly. I mean, Denard Span's been great lately, so you can't just throw Harper in center.
Yeah, Span's been hitting well. And when he hits well, I mean, I think anybody that sits at the top of your lineup, when they hit well, it does good things to your offense.
And what's going on with the first base with Zimmerman? Is that not – I mean, he did it – I think I saw it one time ever.
Well, I think with Harper out, they are really worried about sitting LaRoche, too, because those are their two left-handed power bats.
Right, and LaRoche is batting over 300.
Right, LaRoche is having a great year. Yeah. So I do think against tough lefties, once Harper gets back, you will definitely see LaRoche out.
Okay.
And I think they'll put Harper in. Even though Harper has terrible numbers against lefties, it's because he's like 15 years old and he's never faced lefties.
Right. Oh, you know, I believe wasn't Harper a catcher once?
That is the best. You know, a couple people have said that. And
I know,
yeah,
that's not
that's
work.
Your solution right there. Put Harper a catcher.
Yeah, please. A major league catcher is so different.
I do think Harper will play some center field.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Worth will. I mean, Worth is.
No, I don't think so either. Could he play first or no?
You know, that's a question for next year. If. As much as they love LaRoche, I think it'll be hard for them to keep him.
He's going to go to some young team that needs a veteran. He'll get paid a ton of money and be a rock on that team.
So then let's say you do that. Worth is looking bad in right field. And left field is in the majors, left field is where you put your worst outfielder. So you know, the obvious thing is not necessarily to put Zimmerman in, or not necessarily to put Zimmerman at first and Worth in left. Mm-hmm. Zimmerman looks so good in left that maybe you put Zimmerman in left and Worth at first.
And Harper in right?
And Harper in right.
Yeah, I like
Harper's
that.
Harper to me is he could probably play center for the next few years and give you good defense there. He might not be like an all-star defensive center fielder.
But he's not going to be a Mike Trout.
Right. But to me, he's probably a right fielder.
Yeah.
Because of his arm, not a left fielder.
Right.
And
I agree.
At some point, you know, it probably makes sense to make that switch next year.
Right.
And before this whole Zimmerman shoulder situation, I thought it was just going to be him and Worth flip-flopping. But now, who knows what's going to happen. And both LaRoche and Span are on options for next year. So
right.
Are they?
Oh, I didn't know Span was. So if that's the case, Span might be gone.
Yeah, but Span's option is a lot cheaper.
Oh, okay.
And on top of that, they've Michael Taylor and one other guy in the minors
right.
that I think can probably take over. And you almost wonder if they keep Span and sort of play them both.
You know, how
Span
so?
Span doesn't have big righty-lefty splits. So you don't need to sit him every time a lefty is pitching. But maybe they keep Span because his option's only like $8 or $9 million, which is a lot. You know, Worth's is like $14 or $15. Keep a guy like Span and let Taylor or whoever wins out the center field competition, quote unquote, in the minors be a fourth outfielder on the team and let that guy play a couple days a week. And then if that guy looks ready to take over, then you can trade Span.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's one option. I mean, another option is to let them both go.
Right. Well, yeah.
But and then so the complication is the qualifying offer situation, right?
Right.
Because
which I think it's definitely coming down. That's what's going to come down to.
Right. And so if you give LaRoche a qualifying offer, it's essentially the same amount that
exactly.
you would pay him in an option year.
So why not?
So yeah, but the qualifying the thing that you have to deal with the qualifying offer is because LaRoche is 35 this year. There may be a lot of people that go, I don't want to give up my first round pick for LaRoche.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So, wow, so that's hard.
So if you want to keep him, rather than exercising the option, what you may end up doing is buying him out for a few years and giving him the buying him out for a few million, which, you know, if you don't take the option, and then giving him the qualifying offer, and if he takes it, you have him for another year, and if he doesn't, you go, that's okay, you know, go get a two-year or three-year contract somewhere.
I gotcha.
But if you absolutely don't want him, you almost can't give him the qualifying offer.
Right, exactly. So that'll tell us a lot when it happens.
Yeah, I think so. I think whether he gets a qualifying offer, it may just kind of be like, well, give it to him and close your eyes and figure out what happens after we figure out what happens.
Well,
I think one of the big problems with giving him a qualifying offer, and we're getting way ahead of ourselves right now talking about next
offseason, yeah.
is you can't plan your lineup and what you're doing until he gets signed. And because he's one of those guys that may have some difficulty signing with that first-round pick attached to him, even if he gets signed, it might not be till February or March. And so it's hard to build the rest of your team.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that. All right. I think we've...
Come to the end.
Yes, and I want to now, since the All-Star game is July 15th, I think we'll do a show definitely before that, so we'll make it like our prediction All-Star show.
Yes, we'll do an All-Star extravaganza.
There you go. I'm going with the guy they did not talk in the event, Tanaka, as your starter in the AL, because that guy is the best pitcher I've seen this year.
Yeah, he got blown up his last start, but other than his
God, that guy.
He's been so good, yeah.
How I just don't understand how good. Like, when I saw him pitch, I was just like, no one can hit this guy. It's almost like when I see King Felix pitch type
of thing. The interesting thing is two of the best pitchers in baseball are now from the
Japan.
Japanese league.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
And other than Ichiro, there's some guys like Aoki who are good, but there haven't been the kind of position players. It's basically been Ichiro Matsui that came over.
Yeah.
Right? Who?
Kaz Matsui? No.
I'm talking about Godzilla.
Godzilla was great. I'm trying to think. Wasn't there a guy in the Cardinals that was really good?
You know what? There have been good players, but I think Ichiro and Matsui fit.
You think Ichiro's a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I think. I don't think Matsui is.
No, not yet.
I don't think he played long enough.
Yeah, I mean, he was a doubles machine, and he was great for the Yankees, but I don't think he's – you're right. He might not even – you need 10 years to play.
Yeah, he didn't play long. He was like 32, 33 when he came over?
Yeah, I think
so.
Because
Ichiro was much younger, I thought.
Yeah, I think Matsui might have – actually, I'm looking it up right now. He has exactly 10 seasons.
He was on what, Tampa Bay?
30 games with Tampa.
Oh, God. Was he playing in the field then, or was he a DH then?
Oh, he was mostly DH.
He was a hell of a hitter, though. Those first couple years in the Yankees, he was amazing.
Oh, he was so much fun to watch.
He was fun to watch.
Just a doubles machine, like in 04 and 05.
Yeah. So anyway, our next episode, we'll do a whole all-star thing, and we'll make our predictions.
We'll be talking about how the Nats are like 10 games up at that point.
Right. And plus, Fliegel, you know, this year counts. Are they still doing that?
It still counts.
Oh, I hate that. I'm sorry. I'm not a fan of that, and I cannot wait to the day they give it to home field to the best team with the way
you
it should
and I
be.
I think are very similar. We love spectacles like the All-Star Game.
Yeah.
We just want them to remain spectacles.
Right. I don't need.
Like, oh, the All-Star Game's so stupid and fan voting this. And I'm like, I don't care about any of that stuff. It's just fun to watch these guys get together. But
exactly.
I don't think it should be for all the marbles.
No, it should be pitchers are throwing to either strike out a guy or let them hit a home run. That's my opinion.
Well, the other thing, you know what the biggest annoyance to me about this home field advantage thing, it's not actually home field advantage. It's now every team has like six closers.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I want to see six closers.
That's
I want to see this, you know, seven best starters pitch nine innings
nope.
for each team.
You get what, two starters, three starters maybe?
I want to see the six or seven best starters take up the whole game.
And I want to be able to pick pitchers in the All-Star game. I hate that we can't do that.
Well, I would like that too, actually.
Yeah, okay. Because I'm tired of, we haven't picked anyone from the Pirates. Let's just take some – well, that's a terrible example because Andrew McCutchen. San Diego.
Twins.
Yeah, well, the Twins. There you go. And we have to take a relief pitcher that they have. That's amazing.
Well, actually, the Twins have somebody that probably should go this year, but another bad example.
Do they still have, what's his name, the catcher? Is he still playing?
Maurer? Yeah, but he's not having a good year. Ugh. But
does he still play catcher, too?
No, he plays first.
Okay, that's
right. Suzuki's their catcher.
Oh, lucky
Kurt
them.
Suzuki, who's going to the All-Star game because he's batting 320 right now.
He's amazing. He was there when we didn't have Ramos. Just like Lobaton.
Lobaton had a good game when we saw him.
He did. I love Lobaton. All right, everyone. Well, thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. As always, you can go to thenationalsreview.com. You can follow me on Twitter @Culmination.
Follow me @NationalsReview, or you can go to thenationalsreview.com.
Yes. And please leave us some comments on the articles, on iTunes, everywhere. Talk about us, retweet us, do everything. Get the word out if you're a Nats fan, because we want more Nats fans.
That's right.
So for everyone here at thenationalsreview.com, have a great day, week, and we'll see you at the park.
See you at the park.
Listen up, everyone.